Breakfast puppies?
We're all set to begin, so let's dive right in to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your cars, but mostly it's about dive bars. Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Hey, Xander. What are we drinking right now?
We are drinking the sweet nectar of the gods of fall. You shut your dirty mouth. We are drinking the Night Owl Pumpkin Ale from Elysian Brewing out of Seattle. Our original pumpkin ale brewed with pumpkin, roasted and raw pumpkin seeds, and spiced in conditioning with nutmeg, clove, cinnamon, ginger, and allspice, magnum hops, six varieties of malts, and a bunch of pumpkin seeds.
Well, it tastes like a pumpkin.
It tastes like pumpkin pie, actually. It's kind of,
Taste like pumpkin pie.
It does taste like
and
pumpkin
pie. And it's got
pie.
An owl on
it. It has really an cute owl on it. I don't know if that's a barking owl or a great horned owl.
Who? That is a great horned owl.
That is definitely
a great horned owl.
That's a great horned owl.
I mean, can't you see the horns?
I mean, I see the horns, but barking owls kind of have horns.
They're great. Yes, you are correct. Barking owls do have horns.
It's a great horned owl. It looks so adorable. It looks so mad. And so cute.
Well, speaking of mad and cute, you are listening to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Coming here from Portland, Oregon, we talk about gaming stuff and pretty much everything that Skip just sung about in our intro song. I am your producer NPC, sitting to my left as usual.
Just Jacob.
Dr. Xander Gerrymander.
Poppy Beaujolais.
All right. Welcome back, folks. We are recording our Halloween-themed episode, sort of. We've got an array of pumpkin beers. Ugh. In fact, you know what? Let's go ahead and open up the next one. Because I've already been drinking.
Okay, I will go grab it.
It's in the freezer.
Freezer?
Well, they left it on the table for a while. Yeah.
Don't.
Oh, God. Tell about what happened last time we left beer in the freezer.
Yeah, so the last time you all were over here, we did our special episode on the Oktoberfest. And two beers were left in the freezer.
Uh-oh.
We had beer popsicles the next day. And the cap shit came off, and it was hilarious.
I can't imagine they got any worse than they were.
It was kind of beer slushy in our freezer.
I want a tie rotator. So I can have beer slushies.
A Thai rotator?
Yeah, it's a thing in Thailand. It's a refrigerator that also gyrates.
Oh,
I was picturing like a rotating TIE fighter.
No.
I was not sure what you were talking about.
I thought you were talking about the world's most amazing TIE rack. So now I'm just...
Exactly. All of these things need to happen. We need fan art of rotating TIE rack spaceship.
Wait, a refrigerator that gyrates?
Yes, it shakes back and forth, and it makes your bottles of Singha become beer slushies.
Tell me more about this amazing machine.
One better. We'll talk later.
Mm-hmm. I do at least want to tell you about the Stormbreaker Brewing Pumpkin Peddler. This is a...
Shut your mouth.
This is from Stormbreaker. It's got a Dullahan riding a bicycle.
No.
So, yeah, it kind of fits our theme here.
A what?
A Dullahan. It's basically a headless rider of horses and whatnot. You know, the headless horseman rides around holding the flaming head. It's a Dullahan.
Dullahan.
I could be wrong.
Is that how
Correct
that's pronounced?
Me if I'm wrong, but it's a Dullahan. Well, depending upon which fantasy you subscribe to.
Okay. I'm trying to remember the fucking Tim Burton movie and what. The what's his bucket was called.
Oh, so in the Tim Burton movie, they called him the Hessian.
The Hessian.
That's because he was a Hessian mercenary.
Mercenary in the Revolutionary War.
Stormbreaker Brewing, two beer-loving guys avoiding ghosts and other haunts to tell tall tales and brew legendary beer. We put our heart, soul, and severed pumpkin heads into every ounce of every batch. It's spooky.
Is it spooky, though?
No, this is not spooky.
It is legit spooky.
This is like Nightmare on Elm Street level of drawing on here. It actually looks really cool. Pumpkin Peddler.
How do you spell? Because
they're peddling pumpkins.
Oh, they're peddling. Oh, yeah.
And he's also on a bicycle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to try this pumpkin beer.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, and people of all genders, and all of our listeners, we are drinking beer, which means there will be lots of belching. Tell your grandma not to listen to this episode.
Ooh, this is different. This is a different beer.
Someone's got to hook me up.
This tastes absolutely nothing like the Elysian Night Owl. It's
subtle.
Oh, good. This tastes nothing like the Elysian Night Owl.
Well, there goes our Elysian sponsorship. Thanks, Jacob.
Okay, just so everyone knows, Jacob's the guy who thinks that Crown Apple tastes good. So if you want to go and judge his taste accordingly, you can.
This is halfway drinkable.
Interesting. There's a face.
Poppy's face does not look pleasant.
I'm not convinced. Hold on. Let me cleanse my palate.
Ladies and gentlemen, our wannabe wine snob.
Well, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
My thought on this one is it reminds me of like someone took a Oktoberfest beer and pumpkined it up a bit.
I'm not getting any pumpkin. And I don't know if that's just because the Elysian is so spicy and this doesn't have the spice. But I'm not really getting pumpkin out of this.
Well, we're actually expecting to have a few other pumpkin stories this evening, but we'll get to those in a bit. But first, let's take this to the road.
It's fall. We're running into the start of the rainy season in here in the Pacific Northwest.
Yep.
For those of us living in Portland, we're finding out exactly how much oil has not been bubbled out of the pavement.
Oh, God.
Yeah, as was evidenced by today.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people up in this neck of the woods, it's time to start taking the bikes off the road for motorcyclists, moving over to mass transit for the light bicyclists. A lot of scooter riders start hanging it up.
I'm sorry. Point of order. We call them Scooty McBingbings.
Scooty McBingbings.
There we go. Yes. Thank you. You may continue.
But that said, it's just the start of the party for a lot of folks. Next week, it's Halloween. The Flying 15 Motorcycle Club, Portland's own, celebrates their birthday every year. We also have a bunch of other motorcycle events for other organizations. The Grip MC, Portland's very own Girls Riding Independent and Proud Motorcycle Club holds their annual Halloween bash.
Mm. And I'm assuming both of these clubs have websites that we can go to?
Yes.
So that I can put in the links later?
Yes, yes, yes.
Excellent.
But so for some people, riding this season's just getting started. So we wanted to talk tonight about motorcycle events, bicycle events around Halloween, riding in costume, and how to take your motorcycle gear game to the next level for the spookiest night of the year.
Ooh, spooky.
Now, I've had some experience in the past learning after the fact how not to dress for Halloween when your only mode of transportation is a motorcycle. And it was quite an interesting evening. I'm interested to hear more about what you have to say about this, Jacob.
Well, I'll be real. When it has come to Halloween, I have mixed experience on this. I tend to do a fair amount of tying one on Halloween night. So I'm less likely to be riding Halloween night. I'm more likely to be taking the cage or mass transiting.
Sure, being safe.
But we're in Portland, and there's a good chance on Halloween night, if you look back at the weather report, it's going to be raining cats and dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the last 5 years, three times, it's flooded out the max line.
I need a regional dialect translation assistance, please. Tying one on. Use your words.
When tying one on indicates a full intent to get nice and well lubricated for your evening or afternoon.
Oh, you're going to get shit canned.
Yes.
He's going to get drunk.
You're going to need a designated driver.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember my first Halloween I was here too. Fresh out of Santa Barbara 14 years ago. And I thought, I'm going to dress up. I'm going to get out. I've been here for a month. And it cold. I spent most of my time on the back when we still had the free max lines because I was so cold because my costume didn't have a coat.
You know what? I want to interrupt you for just a moment. I want to raise a glass to RIP the free max line.
RIP the free zone.
Oh,
Square.
We miss you.
Anyway, continue.
TriMet, bring back Fairless Square.
So anyways, I dressed up as Bill Blake from the movie Dead Man.
Oh.
And I couldn't find the cool coat, so I said, I'll go without the coat, because without that goddamn clown suit from Cincinnati, it's not the real thing. So I just went with the white t-shirt and the bloodstains, and
oh,
I was so cold.
Oh, dear.
So that's what I learned real fast, is that in this neck of the woods, a costume that you're going to be out and about with, whether you're on a bicycle, a motorcycle, or even just taking public transit and going from bar to bar, might need to be warm.
I need a quick poll here. Because we can't do raise of hands because it's radio. Have you gone trick-or-treating in the snow?
No. How else do you do it?
I know, right? Your thermal underwear under your, you plan your Halloween costume around your thermal underwear and your winter coat.
Where are you from?
Colorado? Minnesota?
Yeah, see, they're from the...
Cold places.
The cold places.
Oh, yeah.
You people are from below the snow belt where weaker mortals live.
Anyway, sorry. Moving on.
Oh, shit.
The katana has been drawn, guys. This is serious.
I'm sorry. You made me drink pumpkin beer, so I have some hostility coming out.
Oh, it's a switchblade, actually, this time.
Whoa. Let's save the weapons talk for later in the show. Speaking of layering up, one thing that you want to make sure and not do when you are putting together a Halloween costume or Halloween outfit or a costume for whatever purpose and you're hopping on a bicycle, you need to pay attention to those layers, because you may think, oh, well, I'm going to be riding, so I'm going to have some wind, so I'm going to layer up so I don't freeze on the bicycle. And you know what? That's fine. And then you get to your destination, and you're like, shit, now where do I got to put this coat? Mm-hmm. Or you're like, oh, God, you start walking around, you go inside, you start drinking, and you start getting warm, and now you have all these layers. I've experienced that back at my fateful moment one Halloween, where I was like, hey, this is my first year having a motorcycle. I'm going to ride to my destination. And it was awful, because I had to find a place to put the helmet. I had to find a place to, I had to basically take off my costume when I got there, take off the layers that I had underneath the costume, put the costume back on. My costume was just a jumpsuit. So I'm walking around in this jumpsuit where nothing but boxers underneath it. And it's mm-hmm. like, well, you know.
One important thing is, if you're doing face paint and on a motorcycle or scooter, sorry, not going to work.
Nope.
However, if you are on a bicycle, here's a pro tip for you. After you get the makeup on, get some baby powder, sprinkle it all over your face, take a wad of cotton balls and gently tap all over your makeup, usually, and then shake it off. Usually you can then throw on a bicycle helmet, clip it under your chin, and except where you have direct rub, you'll get very little sweat or smear.
And if you go to a store that sells stage makeup, you can get a setting spray for your makeup as well. So you do your grease paint, you do your powder, and then they make a setting spray. And that's going to be either, I think everything is Ben Nye now. I don't think Bob Kelly is still around, but.
Is that the science guy?
No, that's the makeup
guy.
That's
Bill Nye.
Okay.
Yeah, Ben Nye, the stage makeup guy.
Okay.
Bill's brother.
And.
Maybe.
For the love of God, folks, do me a small grace. You're an independent person. You can make your own choices, but do not wear rubber masks underneath motorcycle helmets.
Oh, that sounds really stupid.
Is that a thing people do?
I saw it last year.
How?
So they put a rubber mask. It was like a demon monster head type thing on, and then pulled the full face motorcycle helmet on there and jiggered it up enough where the eye holes, I guess, lined up and was riding around with their visor up. And I was terrified.
Well, we have a lot of topics of things not to do. Do we have any suggestions of motorcycle friendly costumes, or maybe even motorcycle involving costumes, or bicycle, of course?
Yes, you could absolutely very easily be the character of Death from Good Omens.
You can very easily mount, if you're on a cruiser style, mount a lighted jack-o'-lantern such as one a kid gets, a kid carries around with for candy, off of your external power ride, and you're the headless motorcycleman.
Obviously Ghost Rider.
Of course.
Of course.
But not fucking Nicolas Cage like the Henry Rollins song.
No.
Not Nicolas Cage. The fucking comic Nicolas book Cage is and a the God fucking among men.
There's only
back.
There's
Henry
only,
Rollins song, man.
Okay.
There's that Black Flag.
There are only two worthwhile Nicolas Cage customs. One is his character from Snake Eyes, because that jacket was fucking baller. And the other one is Nicolas Cage covered in bees. Now, if you can pull that off, you're a god.
What about his character in Raising Arizona?
Yeah.
It's
so good.
That's one of those costumes that you can just fucking put on a white little tank top.
You need the Woody Woodpecker tattoo that's really poor.
Okay, I guess.
You need the really crappy hair. You need that kind of look as though you've never experienced a single iota of intellectualism in your life. That's what you need. It's a very specific look. Mm-hmm. Also, I've been Nicolas Cage character before for Halloween, so fuck all y'all.
Yeah, but that's one of those obscure things where it's like the joke's on them, and that's just kind of a douche costume.
No, I had fun with it. Uh-huh. I had fun with it, and that's what counts for me for Halloween. Do I have fun with it?
Over the years, there's been a fairly good trend of wearing, just dressing up as a classic ghost. For bicyclists and even painting their bikes white.
We're going to get into ghost bikes now?
Wasn't going to go there, but it's a reference.
We'll save that for a deeper conversation.
However, later. I want to run down some of the most epic motorcycle costumes I have seen. First of all, Cobra Commander on a motorcycle is awesome.
Okay. Love it.
Better.
Love
the
it.
The group of six guys who came in dressed as the Morlocks.
Wow.
Two amazing sport bike themed costumes I saw. One was Beatrix Kiddo.
Yes.
With the yellow helmet and the yellow jumpsuit and a yellow bike.
Fuck
they pulled
yes.
it off well. But another one was someone came as Mighty Morphin Power Ranger. And
oh,
they had a Power Ranger helmet and a Power Ranger suit. Mm-hmm. And I saw this on Reddit, but it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say a really easy one for you 90s kids out there who watched a lot of USA Channel or whatever the fuck it was, is Reno Reigns from Renegade.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, Lorenzo Lamas?
Lorenzo Lamas. Yes.
I did that one year.
I bet you did.
When it comes to bicycles, there's
E.T.
I was about to do the E.T.
What about BMX Bandit?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
BMX Bandit, that would be a fantastic costume if you could get someone to go with you as the Angel Summoner.
But also now we have Stranger Things, the kids from Stranger Things. That'd be a great group costume on little bikes, little BMX bikes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially if you were all like old and gross looking. I would love to see somebody pull out Stranger Things 40 years later.
You know,
I got the same bike, huh?
Next Halloween, I might could be convinced to shave my head and go as 11.
I had an acquaintance.
You could turn it up to 11.
I could. Maybe if somebody donates like $1,000 to our Patreon, I will shave my head.
Which we don't have.
Well, we're going to have one now. I will shave my head and go as 11 from Stranger Things next Halloween.
An acquaintance of mine has been trying to, who owns a Ural and bears a passing resemblance to the actor, is trying to go one year, if he can find someone to do the makeup for him, as Viggo Mortensen from Eastern Promises.
Oh, shit. Not Henry Jones Jr. and Dr. Jones?
I was just thinking that, too. As soon as you said a Ural, it's like...
That would be a great partnership.
That would be a great thing to do when you're middle-aged and your dad's still around, to be like, hey, Dad.
Junior!
Come on.
Technically, that was a BMW, but...
whatever.
The Urals are based on the BMW.
Anybody who wants to dress up as anything Viggo Mortensen is cool by
me.
They get
a pass.
Yeah, they get a pass. Because he's a sexy motherfucker.
So let's talk about costumes not to do. And I wholeheartedly recommend you not to do a fucking Sons of Anarchy costume.
Nope.
Or
do you want to get shot?
Anything that cribs on MC culture is the kind of thing where you might, if you're drinking or irresponsible, and if you're the kind of person who's probably going to do a Sons of Anarchy costume, this might apply to you. You're probably going to end up at a place at some point where words might get said and looks might get exchanged and you could get beat up. Don't do it.
Well, and that, I mean, reminds me of that really brief moment when we were in the Dalles and you were wearing your, you know, jean vest with all your fun, nerdy patches all over it. Your battle jacket with your tunnel snakes.
Tunnel snakes rule.
Yes, they do.
Tunnel snakes rule.
We're the tunnel snakes.
That's us. And we rule.
That's right. But you had your, you know, it was like this all like this nerdy shit or whatever. But that dude from that MC who was also there at the same time, like eyeballed you a couple times and like... It was, and then finally he realized, like, it's just some nerd shit or whatever. But like, you know, I mean, you look like a big scary dude. Like,
I have the beard, I had the biker sunglasses, I'm bald. You know, it looks like everything that like a not on my bike biker could look like.
Yeah,
but I'm wearing a tunnel snakes.
You were in your colors, you know. But like, that's, I mean, especially in places where there are, you know, one percenters and, you know, shit like around the Portland area, like you don't want to mess with that stuff at all.
There's a couple things you can do to make that safer, but generally don't do it if you're going to a motorcycle centric venue.
Don't do it, guys.
So
ladies, people.
We've already talked about rubber masks. One of the things I've seen mistakes done a bunch of times is people who try to incorporate their costume incorporate their motorcycle gear too much into their costume. It gets, even if you're doing an open face motorcycle helmet, it gets really uncomfortable at a party. And I've known two people who ended up with their motorcycle helmets walking off at the end of a night because somebody just thought it was a prop and thought it would be cute to steal. And suddenly they don't have a motorcycle helmet and it's not legal to ride without a motorcycle helmet in this state.
Yeah.
See episode number 4.
Or was that 3? I don't remember.
Yeah.
At Gat.
And ladies and gentlemen and humans of all genders, if your costume involves either booty shorts or a dress or a skirt or something like that, and you want to ride a bicycle or a motorcycle, especially if you want to ride a motorcycle, just, you know, hike it up and put on your rain pants or your jeans or your chaps or something over it. Please do not ride with bare legs. That's just stupid. Your mom called. She's worried. She wants you to put some pants on.
And so do I. So, NPC, what are we drinking now?
There we go. This is something that I got today. Well, not today, but I brought it. It is the Imperial Pumpkin Ale, the Autumn Harvest, from Rubens Brews from Seattle, Washington. Boo, Washington.
Boo, what? Seattle.
Don't boo them.
We have Portland versus Seattle. It's like,
that said, we have some listenership up that way.
Yeah, Seattle's
yay,
a beautiful
people
place.
People in Seattle who are listening to us. Yay, your city's really pretty. Your city sucks.
What?
Yeah, our soccer team's better than yours.
I mean, it's true.
Both of our soccer teams are better than yours.
I mean, the parking in Seattle is terrible, but like, you know, and everything's really expensive.
You make Portland's ability to spend tax money responsibly look.
I know, it's amazing. Oh, how did you do that? How did you make our city planners seem geniuses by comparison?
Oh, God.
We make our developers look non-corrupt.
We say fuck people on a daily basis, and yet somehow you guys make me feel okay about what we got.
So this is, their description on this bottle is simply thanks. Thank you for choosing Rubens. We hope you enjoy drinking this brew as much as we enjoyed crafting it.
Okay.
Come visit our tap room to imbibe our tasty brews, meet our brewers, and become a part of the Rubens Brews family.
Ruben, I'm coming to visit you.
Where are they? Seattle?
Seattle, Washington. They actually have the address here on the bottle.
I like this.
Oh, that's tasty.
This is very tasty. I am not opposed to this.
I'm sorry. What's the address again?
You know what? Seattle, I take everything back. You're a great place, and I'm going to come drink your beer.
Yes. In fact, we're closing the podcast episode and jumping in the car. We'll be there in a couple hours.
Rubens.
It's in Ballard.
Ooh.
Visit our Ballard tasting room, 5010 14th Avenue Northwest.
I got friends next to Ballard.
Hey.
Rubens, if you want to sponsor a Portland podcast that just made fun of your city, please let us know. Anyway, let's talk gaming. We're now taking this to the gaming table, and what following on the theme that we've sort of set up of spooky things and Halloween, we want to talk about scary gaming. Ooh. Horror games, fear in games, ways that you can evoke tension and fright through a gaming experience.
Oh, you mean add zombies?
No, that's generally add tends vampires. To be the opposite of fear. Now, okay, some people have a thing against zombies.
I they give me nightmares.
You had nightmares from Dead Snow.
And from iZombie.
I had
nightmares from iZombie, really? Yes.
Speaking of Seattle.
I've got some trauma issues, and the whole that idea is so of somebody trying to hurt you who
that show
can't
is basically
die.
That show is basically undead Veronica Mars.
I know, you know? But it still gave me nightmares.
Cute. I'm gonna eat this brain and figure out some science shit real quick. Hold on.
So, talking about gaming
and
specifically.
And her little Tupperware container. It was so cute. Good. Her little sad desk lunch of brains.
So, talking about gaming particularly, we want to bring up the concept of what can make a gaming experience scary? What can bring you fear and fright and terror? Now, you know, to some people, fear, fright, terror, and what might be different experiences, but we're just going to kind of lump them all together into scary gaming.
One of the first games that really got me, computer games, that got me so absolutely immersed into this world that it created was Fallout 3. And just having to go and emerge into the post-apocalyptic DC landscape as someone who just loves this country so much was so sad to look at. And then having to go into the fucking subways.
Those were my favorite.
Fucking feral ghouls that just pop out of nowhere. And again, because here you are, you live in your vault a whole life. It is perfectly set up. If you living in a vault your whole life, you don't know what to expect. There are feral ghouls and they are not fun and they are not your friend.
I know a lot of people hated the underground levels of Fallout 3. Those were my favorite.
So good.
And specifically, I played on PC you can get mods. And I played with a mod called Existence 2.0, which is a radio station that adds a whole lot of this strange, ethereal, droning music. And running through the subway tunnels in Fallout 3, listening to that in first person with a flashlight mod that took away the Pip-Boy but replaced it with a directional light. No. It was a terrifying experience.
Do not want.
I'm going to go back a bit. My first time being frightened by a video game was playing in a college dorm room. In the dark.
That would scare me, too.
With the computer hooked up to the stereo system playing old school Doom.
Doom. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My first truly terrifying experience was when I was 19. I had my best friend who had moved away, but was going, had moved back. He had visited back in town to come help me move away from my hometown. And he stayed with me for like 2 weeks. And during that 2 weeks, I had a PlayStation, and we had borrowed a friend's copy of the original Silent Hill. And then we sat in the dark and played Silent Hill. And it was fucking terrifying. The atmosphere, the build up, the whole concept of like, okay, I'm running through this abandoned hospital. My controls are terrible, so I know I probably can't even run away because I'll be too frightened to press the right buttons. But you open a door in a hospital, right? You open this door and suddenly you hear the sound that's like clank, clank, clank. You're like, oh shit, turn around. You leave the room. You go outside, you catch your breath. You check your inventory. You're like, okay, I've got my bat. I got my shotgun. All right, I'm gonna run back in. I'm gonna kill that thing. You got this. You got this, dude. You turn around. You go back in. There's fucking nothing there.
You don't got this.
There's nothing there. It's just a random noise that the game put in to spook you. But then you start getting used to that. It starts happening over and over. And by the fifth or sixth time, you're like, you're ready for it, and nothing comes. The seventh or eighth time, you ignore it. And that's when the thing comes and gets you. And you're like, oh, God damn it. It was terrifying.
They've got some people with some psychology backgrounds working in those games.
Oh, clearly. Clearly. Oh,
absolutely.
So one of the things that I think that ultimately makes something scary is atmosphere. You want to establish a feeling of immersion in whatever the setting of the game is. You need to establish that you need to make somebody feel that they're there and that they're trapped there.
Going off of that, what's really important, whether it's a video game or a board game or an RPG, it's an issue of connection. How well you connect with the avatar you're playing, or avatars you're playing, if you're in a party survival game of some sort. Because there are some very good atmospheric games out there, but you don't actually feel stakes for the person you're playing.
And I will say, too, I know we kind of went and shit all over some zombie games that aren't very in show here, though, but I feel like State of Decay did an interesting thing with their game, if you guys are familiar with that one.
Oh, I'm familiar with State of Decay.
But, I mean, giving characters for you to play that have no relevant survival skills in the apocalypse whatsoever because they've kind of dropped into the middle of it. That, I thought, made it kind of a more terrifying experience because it's not, you know, you're not some badass. You're not some guy who's, or gal who's just really good at killing things and surviving the wilderness. You're just some schmuck who went camping and happened to get caught into it in a bad scenario.
And that's a cool story setting. I agree.
It is. And so, you know, when you look through the character skills that they give them, it's like, your character is good at taking selfies. Wonderful. This will do me good. You know, like those types of things are making it seem much more realistic, which is what I liked about, again, Fallout 3 specifically, was that because they make you start the game being born, so you're with this character the whole way. The adolescence, the birthday parties, the shooting BB guns at the Rad Roaches with your dad, who's Liam Neeson, which is great, and then also finally plunging you into the world at the end. They hold your hand the whole way, so you really feel the character until they finally toss you out in the wasteland.
I haven't played a whole lot of scary video games in my life, but NPC and I have occasionally had some horror video game nights, which we haven't actually done in a while, and we really need to. And the first one, I think we played a lot of Dead Space or something, and it surprisingly didn't scare me that much, and I can't really explain why.
I can explain why, and it's because you weren't controlling it.
Okay.
Dead Space.
I was just watching it, and I was like, oh, obviously something scary and like horrific and deformed is going to jump out from there, you know?
Also, it's because you were watching me play it.
Yeah.
And by the time that we did the horror game night, I had played and beat Dead Space.
You were really good at it.
About 12 times.
Oh, okay.
So I knew everything, and I was, it wasn't a raw experience.
Yeah. Well, okay, but the one game that did surprise me that scared the shit out of me the second time we had a horror video game night in Paul's basement, we played this game called The Suffering.
Yeah.
And that is an older game from like PS1 or what was it?
PlayStation 2.
PlayStation 2. And that game scared the shit out of me. And I was like clutching a stuffed animal, like shivering. Like, I don't know what about it.
It was atmosphere.
Yeah.
And sound design.
Okay.
Because it had the echoing, scraping sound of the knives that would come through. So like every enemy in that had a sound that would be telegraphed to you in the background, letting you know that enemy was coming before you saw it. But the lighting in it was so dark, and it had those flickering ambient lights.
But also that slightly pixelated because it was an older game, like made it a little more... Oh,
it was
more...
still terrifying when it was new, too. Yeah, and it was like cutting edge. But that game, just like Dead Space and many other games, effective use of sound, minimal soundtrack, almost no music, maybe just a tiny hint of a score in the background. Again, because you need to be immersed. And, you know, if you're going to be immersed in a setting, if you yourself are trapped in a dungeon, you don't have a soundtrack, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So sound design, to me, was what made that game fearful.
Hmm.
Also, maybe you weren't the one who went and came over to NPC's house at one point when he was playing Dead Space right in the middle of the drill to the eyeball scene.
Oh.
You sons of bitches.
Dead Space 2.
Yeah. Hey, want to see this game I'm playing? Not anymore!
I'm good, thank you. I hate you. I want to go now.
And that was that. Dead Space 2 has a was. I personally, okay, many Dead Space fans will fight over this, but I think Dead Space 2 is the masterpiece of the series. And that scene, it, everything in Dead Space was like Dead Space 1, but the game was telling you, oh, we can do better than that. Like every time something would happen in the game, there would be a nod to the first game and then it would escalate it. Like, okay, you know that how you know how all that shit in the first game you thought was weird and scary? Now we're going to make you lay down on a bed and control a drill into your own eyeball.
God.
That's what I walked into. Wait, hold on. Let me pause this real quick. No, go fuck yourself. Continue while I go and cry in the bathroom for a while. Thank you.
That's like,
don't want this.
That's like that 90s movie with alien abduction and the fucking needle in the eyeball and the aliens and oh, for fuck's sake.
Fire in the Sky?
Yes. Yeah. That movie traumatized me.
Oh, Xander, remind me to send you my collection of short stories of body horror.
No.
When we talk body horror, are we talking like Poppy Z Bright body horror? Are we talking about Tokyo Gore Police, Japanese extreme cinema kind of?
Because I can deal with the Japanese cinema, but I can't take Poppy Z Bright.
Oh my God, did you read Exquisite Corpse?
Hold on. We're going to turn that into a side conversation.
So this is not a game I played. It's a game I want to play. And I'm going to do a shout out to Phil the Conquistador on YouTube for this. I'm a follower of his channel. And he did a review about a year ago of a game, Too Dark. That's number two, Dark. It's
PC, PlayStation?
It's a Steam game.
Steam game.
And it has some retro graphics. Yeah, so you're dealing with a lot of pixelated stuff. He did mention that it had really good light control, but it has this like 16-bit Nintendo Legend of Zelda-esque graphic thing, which normally is a disconnector, right? But just in watching his review of this game, the stakes. A bunch of kids have been kidnapped and their lives are on the line. I'll be straight up, folks. The game is probably a little triggering for a lot of people.
Good content warning.
And I don't blame you, but it looks awesome.
That is a really good example of how you don't necessarily need the best graphics and the most intense visceral visual experience for a video game to be frightening. There is one of the most classic survival horror games of all time. It's called Sweet Home.
Oh, yes.
It looks like a NES era JRPG kind of thing. Like it almost looks like you're playing Dragon Warrior, but it's a horror game and it's fucking scary as shit.
Well, one of our other horror video game nights is I sat and watched you play Limbo for like 4 hours. And it's just a black and white side-scrolling masterpiece. It's fun and it's twisted and it's scary. And I think the interesting thing about Limbo is that you end up feeling like a really horrible human being because every time this poor little child is horribly murdered, it's hilarious.
You're a bad person.
I am a bad person.
I'm going to go and give another little shout out to Life is Strange. We talked about that many episodes ago, but an episodic game that I thought I wasn't going to be afraid about at all by playing episode 1 or episode 2 or episode 3, even in episode 4, because it took a real, real dark turn at the very end. And I'm not going to spoil anything, but when you have a buildup like that, where you have an emotional buildup of like trying to figure out this character to begin with and her powers, and then this weird kind of time travel element that makes you cry because of the fucked up things you have to go and decide. And then they go and they throw this real, real dark, again, probably triggering thing for a lot of people at the end, was just, I didn't even see it coming because of all the other weird turns it took to begin with. And to have that at the end was just...
Games that execute Prisoner's Dilemma are always good.
So this was a topic that I figured that at one point we might be able to split it and talk about video gaming and then tabletop, but we'll save the tabletop for some other time. I mean, you know, if we're still here next year, maybe we'll focus on fear and tabletop games. I have some other things I do want to talk about with when it comes to fear and video games. And one of the things I want to point at is the source of the fear, the nature. Why are you actually feeling tension and fear? Because some video games will tie that into you. They will try to evoke a visceral experience in you, the player. They will try to, you know, they will try to point at and poke at things that you find fearful. And it could be something that's, I'm afraid of spiders and I don't want to see a lot of spiders. And it could simply also be I'm not really okay with the horrific things, the blood, the gore that's in front of me. And that's more of a visual kind of emotional thing, I guess. But then there's the cheap way of doing it. Well, there's two cheap ways of doing it.
You mean the bad way of doing it?
Well, there's two cheap and bad ways of doing it. One of which is the jump scare.
Yeah.
Where you spend all of this time establishing the
atmosphere. Aliens versus colonial marines.
You spend all this time establishing the atmosphere and the setting and the immersion, and just to go boo over and over again at someone. To me, I don't appreciate that. It's cheap. It's poor. But another one is the mechanical fear. Well, I'm afraid because if I die, I'm going to have to replay the last hour of the game.
Or the mechanical fear by fear as a stat. Thank you, fucking Escape from Innsmouth.
Jesus Christ. You know what? A little meter on a screen that just says your fear points are at 37 or something. That's not scary. A number on a screen isn't scary unless that number is literally you have 12 seconds to live.
I did kind of like
the player.
I did kind of like how they did that in Darkest Dungeon, though, with the like, how insane are you?
But again, that's a mechanical fear. It's more of a, if I keep doing this, my characters are going to be less under my control.
Yeah.
And it's, again, it's more of a mechanical. It's,
yeah.
There's less of the, there, it's less personal and more, it's more tedious. It's a, it's a fear of having to deal with bullshit.
If a game is truly scary, you will lose the control of that character because you're scared anyways.
You will shake and drop the control because you're freaked out.
Yeah, you don't need to have a little meter tell you because if a game has done it correctly, you'll just jump and like drop the remote or whatever the fuck you're doing because you're just like...
What's also interesting is what works for a video game is... to instill fear is often not the same things that work for board games and role-playing games.
Absolutely.
I think two things when I've been watching either, you know, movies or, you know, scary video games, there are two things that kind of stand out for me. I think that jump scares can be used well. And I think for me personally, if I go into something expecting the jump scares and that's like what I'm there for, that can increase the experience. Specifically thinking about like haunted houses and like the latest It film. I thoroughly enjoyed watching It, even though I generally don't watch scary movies because I get nightmares because trauma. But I knew what I was getting myself into, and I went into it with that sort of same set. I really love haunted houses for some mysterious reason, because I know what I'm expecting. I'm getting scared for fun, and I think there's a way that can be used well, and I think there's a way that can be used cheaply, just as a point of order.
All of those are examples of a completely different medium than a gaming experience. With a gaming experience, you ultimately want to be in control of your participation in that experience. And when it comes to being afraid of having wasted your time.
Yeah.
That's not fear. That's tedium.
Which for someone with ADHD is kind of terrifying.
Well, it's also someone who's growing old. Has less time to spend on such things.
That's fair.
Your scary mechanic is I have to repeat the last hour of play, or I have to go back to the last save and try again.
That's some sadistic shit.
That's not fear. Yeah. That's lame.
You know. Second thing is the, and I think we're talking about, again, sort of lack of control or the appearance of lack of control. things that scare me the most are this idea of this, and I can kind of extrapolate fear from this, especially with things that take place like in space, like something like Dead Space or a movie like Event Horizon, which is this idea of like you are out in the middle of space in goddamn nowhere. You can run out of oxygen and die pretty much, a mechanical failure will kill you. And then like something like Event Horizon, again, it's a movie, not a video game, but a lot, but Dead Space is very much like Event Horizon, is the idea of there is evil shit from another dimension completely out of your control, and you may lose control of yourself and do horrific things, and you may have no say over that. That's terrifying.
That reminds me of something, and I want to close out our segment with this, of one of the Dead Space games. It was a rail shooter on the Nintendo Wii, and it was called Dead Space Extraction. And if you've played Dead Space, the first one, the Dead Space Extraction is kind of built upon thinking you've played the first one. So it plays upon certain tropes of the series that you would have expected from the first one. So the game opens, you're at this mining colony, your people around you are starting to go crazy, they're starting to turn into these monsters, and you're like, oh no, this is where the monster thing started, and you're killing these people. And then, sorry, spoilers, you might want to skip to the next section if you haven't played this game and you care. But at the end of the very first stage of it, all these monsters come out and shoot you dead. And then it zooms out, and they're security guards because you went nuts and started murdering everyone around you, believing them to be crazy. And that's when the game actually begins. And that, to me, is a beautiful set stage of taking that perception of what's actually really going on and suddenly just punching you in the face with it. And it's beautiful.
You know what really scares me? Someone caring about the Wii.
This is the Two Towns Cider House Hollow Jacked, J-A-C-K apostrophe D, Imperial Pumpkin Cider. So what we have here, extra mischievous, Hollow Jacked takes our fall classic of fresh pressed apples, caramelized pumpkins, and sweet potatoes that are finished with local honey and spices to a whole new level.
Oh.
Serve chilled. Coming in hot at 8.4% ABV.
Oh, shit.
With heirloom pumpkins.
I'm feeling it, girl. Hook me up.
So I am having none of that because I'm just not a cider drinker. I've gone to the Laurelwood Brewing Company pumpkin ale. That's pretty much it.
Well, I want Portland, some of that. Oregon. I want some of that, too.
You know, drink your cider.
Well, give me both, please.
No, drink your cider. Okay.
Yeah. How is it? It's very good. It's very, very good.
Mm-hmm. All right, cider.
All right, that's good.
So
I approve.
What the fuck is that?
Are you saying that about the cider?
Yes.
Well then, don't bogart her glass. Pour that out evenly.
What the fuck did I just put in my mouth?
Nothing more, because apparently you don't deserve this, and that's fine.
Oh,
cheers.
That is actually what she said.
Too many times than I care to admit.
Oh! Hot take. So.
I love you guys.
Halloween and bars.
Halloween and bars.
Oh, so man. Many stories.
And this is coming from you, Xander.
Yeah.
Of all people, Mr. Halloween.
Yeah.
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 Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. God, that's gross, too.
So what's... So let me help you over the hump here, bud, bartender to bartender.
Sure.
What sort of bars have you worked at on Halloween?
Well, okay, I will say this, though. I felt blessed for a while because I was working the Transylvanian Voodoo Ball at the Star Theater for my first couple of Halloweens.
God bless you.
God bless you, sir.
Well, that's not actually Halloween. That's the next day.
No, it was Dia de los Muertos, but it was what I was working. And it was always a Day of the Dead. It was when I was a part of Vagabond Opera with Skip Von Kusky, our composer of our theme song. And it was either working as a part of the show itself, as in on stage with the band, because I was part of the band for a while.
I.e. safe.
I.e. super safe, super backstage, super not around all y'all. Or a few times I did actually work it as a bar back, which was not the worst thing.
And mad props, Xander, for frequently getting us in before the rest of the crowd.
Thank you. So it was amazing. So we could come
share our love for both Vagabond Opera and also Trivona, but also you.
Aw, yeah, that was a lot of fun. I was always happy to go, yeah, I'm just going to let you in right now. I don't give a shit. You guys already bought tickets. I don't give a shit.
I really miss the Transylvanian Voodoo Ball.
Yeah, yeah, to be fair, we did buy tickets.
Yeah.
And then we got there before everyone else anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you let us in.
Yeah, I did all those things and more.
So we could always get the best seat.
If I had my druthers, I would have had our wedding at the Transylvanian Voodoo Ball.
That would have been epic.
But that was one of our plans.
It was one of our plans, but it doesn't. But it's not happening anymore. So plan B.
Yeah, it's not a bad plan B. And then my last job, I eventually just started explicitly requesting to just be the Halloween DJ, so we don't have to deal with any of their bullshit of being a bartender or a patron. So I got to go play whatever the hell I wanted. Plus, I got to drink and get paid for it. And it was wonderful.
But Xander, why would you avoid bartending on Halloween?
Why would you avoid bartending on New Year's Eve, Jacob?
Because of people like me in our 20s.
I'll be honest. I'll bartend St. Patrick's Day. I'll bartend Cinco de Mayo. Ugh. I will bartend New Year's Eve. I will bartend 4th of July. I skip Halloween.
Wow. Why is that?
Well,
it bad.
It bad.
It bad? Really?
So let's get down to brass tacks. Why it bad, Xander?
I would say, unlike most other holidays, Halloween is a time in which people feel as though they can be absolute delinquents in the nth degree and in costume and have no ramifications for their actions whatsoever, more so than these other drinking holidays, I would argue. And it's almost the worst form of amateur hour, except it's amateur hour in costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Costumes create different personas for people.
Yeah.
I'm going to give a quick shout out to my buddy whose alternate persona is Elvis. When he puts on the Elvis wig, he becomes someone completely different. Someone that gets punched. Someone that has the cops called on them. Because he develops this kind of Vic Ferrari Andy, what's his name?
Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman, that transition.
Yikes.
He becomes this other character. And I can imagine, like, bartending, that would be crazy.
I have had the pleasure of bartending at a bunch of different venues on Halloween and working security at a bar on Halloween. And let's put it this way.
So are you going to take your mask off for me?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The other thing is that, like, you know, in the past decade, a little less than that, we've suddenly gotten a little real in the geek community about how cosplay is not consent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, back in the 90s, oh my God, it was, I don't know how many times I said, sir, you need to take your hands off of that young lady.
Yikes.
I imagine it only gets worse the more and more women's costumes get sexualized and pushed upon them. When you just go to a bar and it's like a whole bunch of dudes in like boring ass costumes with, like, you know, dicks hanging off their noses, and then like a whole bunch of women that are just sexy. Their costume is literally sexy girlfriend.
Right.
Sexy doctor girlfriend.
Hey, you know it. You know it.
I do. It's
such a good costume.
Within the major mainstream culture, that is definitely a thing, and I won't argue that.
This booty don't need explaining.
What I've seen problems with working as a bartender, though, is it's not necessarily the person in the real sexual costume, because in full disclosure, I've worked at both traditional gay bars and straight venues on Halloween. So I've seen people of both genders be the receiver of unwelcome advances.
And I don't want to imply that the costume...
All genders.
The costume creates the situation. What I'm mainly thinking is it never does. Like, we've been with our over-sexualization of Halloween. We as a society are creating this situation that I can only imagine getting worse and worse over time.
But where I was going with that, it's not necessarily how sexual the costume is. It's how sexual it is in the eye of the beholder.
Exactly.
Fair.
Yeah. It's not the costume wearer.
It's not the costume wearer, and it's not their fault for wearing the costume.
One of the worst ones we had to intercede in, where we had to call the police. This young lady showed up in one of the most Puritan versions of a Raggedy Ann doll costume I have ever seen. And we turned out to have a creeper in the bar who that just happened to be their number.
Whoa.
I can appreciate a well-done Raggedy Ann costume.
I was going to say, that's probably pretty awesome.
Yeah. Oh, it was epic. She actually hand-sewed it herself. I got the whole story while she was in tears.
Poor girl.
That got really good, then really sad real fast.
Now, let's spin this around because, I mean, we've talked about how this is horrific. How going to the bar can be fun on Halloween. Take us off, Xander.
Okay, so this was, I think, the first or second year that I knew Euclid.
Euclid, if you're listening, say hello. I miss you.
We're going to get you on.
We got to get Euclid on.
Yeah. So
Euclid is an amazing, vastly interesting person to talk to.
Yeah.
Who I would love to put on the microphone.
Yeah, she's wonderful. And yeah, I talked to her earlier this year. So we went out one Halloween. This is when I was doing one of my awesome Nicolas Cage costumes.
Which one?
I was Peter Lowe from Vampire's Kiss.
You know, that's not much of a costume, though, Xander.
It is when you have a dead bird in your mouth, because that's what he did in the movie. And you run.
It's a great movie, by the way.
When you run through Pioneer Square with a stake in your hand, telling people to kill you because you're Nosferatu vampire, you idiot, and people don't know what the hell is going on. It's really fun. So we ended up at the Yamhill Pub.
That's not a costume. That's performance art.
And it was really good.
I'm calling a timeout here. Xander's talked a little bit here about his tendency to embrace Nicolas Cage characters as costumes.
Uh-huh. You're welcome. You're welcome.
I need to see one of these in person, because right now it just kind of sounds like you're using your vague passing resemblance to Nicolas Cage phone in costumes on Halloween.
Okay, first off, those are fighting words.
Wow. Yikes.
I said I could be wrong, and all he has to do is produce the costume, and I will take it back.
The amount of hairspray I had to put to make my hair not this dark was financially devastating. But
right, hold on. Folks. Important question. What movie star does Xander look like? It's not Nicolas Cage.
Thank you.
Maybe a little Silas Weir Mitchell?
I could see it.
A teeny bit?
Yeah, he's not necessarily a movie star so much, but he is a media person. Are you familiar with Silas Weir Mitchell? He was Monroe on the Grimm TV show, The Werewolf. He was hilarious.
I was on Grimm, actually.
He wasn't a werewolf.
Was he really?
Was a werewolf?
Yeah, I was on Grimm.
Oh,
yeah.
Awesome. Well, a lot of people were.
Oh, wait. We saw you on Grimm, actually.
We did? Which episode?
We did. I remember we were watching it.
Carnival episode.
We even texted you and we saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was on Grimm.
I think he looks a lot like Philippe de Palerone, but I watch Spanish foreign films. What? So.
Oh.
You should take this as a compliment. He's a Castilian. He is a Castilian heartthrob. You should.
Yeah, oh, Castilian.
Honestly, I think he looks like my artist Juan Ochoa. I can see it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever seen a picture.
They have similar
of Juan.
Facial hair.
Really? Okay.
Yep. I think Juan, if you're listening, you should challenge Xander to a facial hair off.
Ooh.
So next topic. What celebrities do we all look like?
Yeah. Anyway.
So
Billy Zane.
who are you saying looks like Billy Zane?
That's my story.
Why do you think I messaged him in the first place?
Yikes. So we end up at the Yamhill Pub. I'm dressed as Peter Lowe from Vampire's Kiss. Euclid is dressed like Reverend Harry Powell from Night of the Hunter, with love and hate tattooed on her fists. The whole outfit and everything. We go there, and at some point a man shows up, and he is dressed in Spartan armor, completely comprised of PBR cans and boxes.
Oh, that is epic.
With the whole helmet made of PBR cans. He's got the sword, the shield, the little armored skirt thing.
It's called a skirt.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got that made out of PBR cans. It is epic.
Amazing.
epic.
And you know what? If you're wearing an outfit like that on Halloween, where do you go?
You go to the Yamhill Pub. The bar that sells the most PBR of any bar in Portland. More than most bars in the entire United States.
That man is a defender of American freedom.
Who are you, sir? I saw you 1 year. Come find us. I need to know who you are. But that was one of those just, we're just going to bounce around and see what happens. I mean, at the Yamhill. And that guy showed up, and it was gorgeous.
Is there a bar in Portland? No, so this is a thing from where I'm originally from. But is there a bar in Portland that does a good costume contest?
All of them?
I said a good one.
I would disagree. Every costume contest I've ever been to has been the person who won had some off the rack costume, and it was just the lady with the biggest tits.
Really? Because that's not been my experience at all. Ever.
I've been going to the wrong bars.
No, well, that's because Poppy and I have gone to special bars.
That's true. We went to special bars. Happens.
But no, I.
And you were robbed. Thank you very much. Because
I've been robbed before in Halloween costumes.
Let's just say that what she is referring to is a costume contest that we went to for a private club where I went dressed as Captain Spaulding from Night of a Thousand Corpses.
Yes, yes.
House of a Thousand Corpses? All the corpses.
Rob Zombie vehicle.
I've had too much pumpkin.
We've had a lot of pumpkin.
And there's a little bit left in there if you want some. House of a Thousand Corpses. So I went as Captain Spaulding, which was a Sid Haig character. And it was amazing. And the makeup was perfect. And that I grew facial hair for that costume.
Yes. I can see you pulling that off.
And I
want to see it again.
I had the most cheers.
You're kind of turning me on.
Some lady in a store-bought show your tits costume won. And it's like,
yep.
I was robbed.
You were robbed.
Yep.
She wasn't even as good as like the lady with the super awesome hand sewn sexy Red Riding Hood.
Totally.
Thing.
Yeah.
Anyway. I honestly think she knew the person.
That's a private club thing.
Well, and the DJ slash judge was drunk as shit.
But so
that's
for public
what happens
venues,
when you go to a place like that. I'm sorry. That's what you expect.
That's fair.
We paid money to get in. God damn it.
And you paid money to lose.
So, but for if somebody out there knows a bar in this town that has a decent costume contest, please post it on the webpage, Twitter, whatever. Get it to us because, damn it, I need that back in my life.
So I will say, though, having been at the Transylvanian Voodoo Ball for about 4 or 5 years, either running the costume contest, which I mostly did, that their costume contest was almost exclusively on point with the best fucking costumes because I also helped pick out the best ones. So I made sure that they were going to be quite exquisite costumes that were going to be judged on stage. And we had a decibel reader, so it was done by audience appreciation.
One of the reasons that Poppy and I were choosing the Transylvanian Voodoo Ball as a place for our potential wedding, by the way, if you haven't been listening and paying attention, we're getting married. We're actually getting married next week on Halloween, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But the Transylvanian Voodoo Ball, we had such amazing experiences there going in costume, in makeup, like dressed up, that we actually ended up at one point getting one of the best seats in the house because we got there early, which is what you do.
Thank you, Xander.
You're welcome.
We sat down and people kept asking us can we sit at this table? Because, you know, we're tired. I'm like, no, you're younger than us. Go away. But then we saw this older couple come in the most exquisite, amazing, like handmade, beautiful costumes.
Their makeup was on point.
And they were significantly older and they didn't even ask us anything. We just saw them standing there and we said, hey, you want to join us? Like, oh my God, thank you. That's amazing. And we sat and we made such an amazing connection all because of costumes. And it was beautiful.
You invite me into your podcast. I ask a simple question.
Oh, God.
Where can I go for a good costume contest? And like everyone else, you disappoint. You tell me about the good old days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Somebody needs to help this old man.
You know, if you don't want to hear about the good old days, This isn't the podcast to be listening to.
Okay,
we literally do eulogies for dive bars on here, sir.
I just want to say one thing.
As the oldest person on this podcast, God damn it.
The last Transylvanian Voodoo Ball, I was wearing a goddamn corset and a hoop skirt.
She ordered it, like, from across the
long
world.
Yeah. Yes.
And it looks so good. It looks
and so good. Like, I didn't win the costume contest. I was very upset.
I'm sorry, but there was someone who dressed up like Edgar Allan Poe and a raven. That was a great couple's costume.
Do you know how hard it was to go to the bathroom in the fucking Star Theater wearing a hoop skirt?
Very well acquainted. I've cleaned those restrooms many times.
I'm just saying.
Also, I was not unashamed to go and really happily allowed the people. Like, 2 years in a row, we had someone dressed up as Dead Bin Laden.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah.
Matching with the song.
With the bullet hole in the head.
Cell phone and the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That one year. And then the next year, Dead Gaddafi showed up. Yeah. He was so drunk, he didn't even know he won the costume contest, which was, again, by audience appreciation, applaud from a decibel reader. So it was fair. Yeah.
But I just want to say that year, my costume was amazing. My makeup was amazing.
It all was.
You know? It's okay.
No disagreement.
I have a lot of funny stories about that hoop skirt, but those are for later.
This is the last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol, get going. Drink up, drink up, drink up, then order again.
So, Jacob, how was your pumpkin carving experience?
Oh, just the same as it is every year. I got up at 5 a.m.
You got your knives out. You got your pumpkin carving tools. You got your stencils all ready to go. You got your...
Well, yeah, you could say that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, yeah. So, you have your theme going like you do every year with mm-hmm. the stencils and the pumpkins and everything. It's going to just look exquisite.
Yep.
You're just ready to go and carve the shit out of those pumpkins. Tell me how it goes.
Well, I get up at like 5 a.m.
You bought your Rick and Morty stencils, of course.
Well, I hate Rick and Morty, so yes.
Okay, go on.
I drove over to my friend Leonard's house.
Oh, you do it at a friend's house. That's so sweet. They have kids?
Sort of. Kids? Yeah, Leonard does. He's the president of my local of my motorcycle chapter, so yes.
Cool.
But then we headed out towards our shooting range.
Hmm?
Yeah, and then we did what we do every year.
You threw knives at the pumpkins, right?
No. We lined up the pumpkins. Everybody had their own pumpkin. And we carved the pumpkins.
With your dicks? How did you do it?
With your...
Well, I used...
Your dick.
An AR-15 firing 22LR with a fast-release mag and a nice standard set of iron sights.
Well, you have to have precision when you carve your pumpkins, right?
You could say that, but the Kevin who was there, he was running on a Scorpion Evo 9mm with a peep sight. He actually ended up winning. He also cheated, though, because he did the exit wound theory.
Okay, this doesn't sound like a normal pumpkin carving.
So you carved your pumpkins with bullets.
Yes.
Nice.
Like we do every year.
Fantastic.
And
do you light them up afterwards?
Well, we'll get to that in a minute.
I mean, after you lit them up, am I right?
I do have a special question for you.
Yes.
After you were done, did you have a shot of Powers?
I did when I got...
And that's a reference to something
shame.
That...
Shame.
No, no,
hasn't
no,
been
no,
released
no, no,
yet.
No, 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 no.
But will be soon.
I could not on the site because... The people I was out with are a mixture of drinkers and non-drinkers, but the first shell of the day, as is my wont, went home in my pocket, and I had a nice pour of Irish whiskey.
Irish whiskey?
It was Powers.
Yes, right, girl.
Traditions must be betrayed.
Fist bump. There we go.
You can fist me
but
later.
Yes, so what it is... is the Halloween tradition for me and a group of my friends, including a couple of different members from my motorcycle chapter, is we go out and we carve pumpkins using firearms. You can use whatever firearm you want to bring or borrow. You can you choose your own pumpkin. And we go out, we set up, we warm up on paper targets for a little bit, and then each person takes a turn carving their pumpkin at range.
Are you actually making shapes in them?
Oh, yes. I'll post some of the photos.
Okay. I saw some that you had posted on other social media.
So you're actually trying to carve out an eye.
You are trying to do a jack-o'-lantern. Yeah,
some of them were actually discernible.
Fascinating. Yes.
Really?
I had everyone kind of scared because I was doing good until I accidentally had a through-and-through that blew out the bottom quarter of my pumpkin.
R.I.P. pumpkin.
You know, just it's, you know, when it comes to soft tissue trauma on squash, you never know what happens.
So can well, we
you
like-
know what? I'm sure your pumpkins look gorgeous.
They did.
Oh.
But at the end
until
of the
you squashed them.
Interesting you should say squashed. We didn't so much squash them because these valiant gourds, these gourdiers, these gourds that faced the field of battle and came out the other side.
The Guardians of the Galaxy, as it were.
Oh, you could say that. They deserve better than a mere stomping or squashing. And that, my friends, is what Tannerite is for. Tannerite is a low-powered explosive. We mixed it up. A container of Tannerite went into every pumpkin, and then it was set off. And those great gourds were sent skyward in millions of little pieces to go to Gourd Valhalla.
When you did so, did you play?
We did not actually play the Star Spangled Banner, but... Okay. We did have several people with their hands over their hearts or saluting as their military service did dictate.
See, I would have played O Fortuna.
Rite of the Valkyries, yes. Maybe?
Night on Bald Mountain.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Toccata, Fugue, in D minor.
So perhaps next year, the rest of the Bikers, Dice, and Bars cast would like to join me.
I would very much.
Speaking of pumpkins... What are we closing this out with?
Our very last beer is Elysian. Again, we have the Punkuccino Coffee Pumpkin Ale. Xander is most impatient.
This is a good one.
No, sir.
And
I don't like it.
This is a coffee pumpkin ale, a pumpkin ale with the attitude of a world-weary barista. Punkuccino packs a short shot of Stumptown coffee in your pint with just a shake of cinnamon and nutmeg. Pour carefully. Punkuccino is unfiltered and may contain sediment.
I'm drunk enough at the end of the night that I will come out and say, don't like Stumptown coffee. Sorry.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
So in case you all haven't picked up from this, I don't like pumpkin ales.
And it's your right to be wrong.
I like pumpkin. I cook with pumpkin. I like pumpkin pie.
I fucking hate pumpkin pie.
Is it a texture thing for you?
No, the texture's fine. I just don't like pumpkin pie. Well, first off, I don't like pie.
Cake. Yeah, yeah.
I like pecan pie.
Which makes sense.
Carrot cake, and I like cheesecake, and that's it.
You're 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Yeah.
For me, the problem...
You've not had my funeral pie yet, and I will make it for you one of these days.
What is your funeral pie?
It's a traditional Amish pie that's made all year round because...
Who knows when someone's going to die?
I know what you're talking about,
sir.
So
it's made with year-round ingredients you can have dried and stored.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what's in it?
Well, when someone...
Is it pumpkin?
Or something, you know, dies, I'll make it for you.
Yeah, but is it pumpkin?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
So
raisins.
So for me, the thing is that...
Shut your dirty mouth.
Raisins are the worst fucking things.
Ooh, I'm stepping back.
Oh,
that's racist.
That's raisinist.
No rhyme or reason for that one, but let's continue.
Your humor's getting a little dry.
I heard it through the grapevine that...
Okay, guys. Guys, killing me.
That was not a grape joke.
We need to move this along.
Moving right along. I have not cared for most of these beers. The Elysian was okay. The night owl.
No, we had two Elysians.
The one with the owl on it. Yeah, that was okay.
But
okay.
You didn't care for the Punkuccino.
No, it's kind of gross.
Okay, let's give an assessment of what we think of these ones so far. I'm going to hold them up. You tell us what we think. The Laurelwood Pumpkin Ale.
I don't remember it.
It was the last.
Oh, wait. That was the last one? That was pretty good,
actually. It was
actually.
Gross.
It was all right.
I hated it. I loved it.
Did not like it.
I drank the whole thing, which is why I should probably stop talking at this point.
Elysian Night Owl.
Drinkable.
Ugh.
NPC gives a thumbs up.
Oh, God. Oh.
Jacob doesn't count. I'm going to go with my favorite so far. Two Towns Cider Hollow Jack.
Needs to be drug out in
that,
the street.
Oh, my
shot.
God. That was amazing.
Awful.
So good.
Disgusting.
So, so good.
Better than Poppy's
that
opinion.
That was the second one that we had,
no,
right?
That was no, that was the cider you refused to taste.
That's the one where I was like, yeah. What the fuck did you put in my mouth?
Yeah, that was great. And we got Ruben's Brewing.
I really like that one.
I
think that's the one that when like you this. Find the unanimous choice.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. All of us
one.
Were like...
Yeah, that's good. There's a little bit more if someone wants
I'm sorry,
it.
Sorry, Seattle.
Give it me. Here, you have this coffee shit.
We take back everything bad we said about Seattle.
No, that one was really good. And then the pumpkin chino, what are we thinking?
There was another one.
The Stormbreaker.
Stormbreaker.
I don't
Jacob,
remember.
You liked the Stormbreaker.
Well, I mean, admittedly, it was following on the heels of the Elysium, I don't like that much. It wasn't bad.
Was it?
But yeah.
It tasted flat.
Honestly, this beer tasted like it had been opened before we drank it.
So
yeah.
With that was my problem. It struck me like that one was an Oktoberfest beer that someone had added a little nutmeg to.
That checks out.
Yeah, it was pretty mellow.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Well, especially I think if we had known more about these, we could have put them in order from like spiciest to
hell
spiciest.
No.
Mm-hmm. Because I think that doing the Night Owl first might have fucked up our palates for the Stormbreaker. But that's
it was
just
the one that we had the six pack for.
That's
I was
going to
say there were good reasons for that.
That's just the one of the wine snobs' opinion.
So I am not a pumpkin ale fan at all.
No.
I admittedly detest the stuff, generally speaking, with very few exceptions. I have found, though, what matters to me is at what point in the brewing process they add the spices. Mm. Most pumpkin ales add it at the very last stage as they're kegging it and just letting it sit, and they don't do it early enough. And I could tell with the Autumn Harvest and the Hollow Jacked and the Punkuccino that they add they add elements of the spices earlier, and that really cuts down on the taste of dry allspice in my mouth that I really dislike, even though in other foods I love allspice.
My primary memory of the first time I tried a pumpkin ale was that it tasted like hot dog farts.
I need to know more about your experience with hot dog
farts. I don't know what that means.
You know.
No, I don't.
How hot dog farts smell? That's how it tasted.
Does this involve like felching after a ball game?
Okay, on that note, you have been listening to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Once again, recorded here in Portland, Oregon. I am NPC.
Jacob died.
I am just Jacob.
I am the Pumpkin King.
I'm Poppy Beaujolais.
And again, let's see if we can remember it this time. We want to remind you.
Rubber side down.
Always tip your bartender.
Meet your dice. Always roll criticals.
And please always drink responsibly.
Did we get it right?
And holy have a shit. Happy Halloween.
Have a happy Halloween.
Just call a Lyft, yo. Don't drive.
Woo!
No, be safe out there, kids.
Be safe out there, kids.
And by the way, Lyft and Elysian Brewery, if you want to sponsor a podcast, please let us know.
And once more for the people sitting in the back, cosplay does not
equal
consent.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, friend. We've reached the end of Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your car. But Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Yep.